Good morning. It's my privilege this morning to be presenting on the Maternal and Newborn Health in Ethiopia Partnership, and I'm really honored to be here on behalf of my co-presenters and our team of the great project team that we worked with both in Ethiopia and in the U.S. To begin with, I have no financial relationships to disclose. The Maternal and Newborn Health in Ethiopia Partnership, or MANEP, was a 3.5-year learning grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The grant was given to Emory University School of Nursing with subgrantees of JSI Research and Training, University Research Company, which is my organization, and Addis Ababa University. We were focused on 51 communities in 6 rural districts in the Amhara and Oromia regions of Ethiopia, and this covered a population of around 12,000 births per year. I want to ask your indulgence for me to use 2 Ethiopian words in this presentation. One is the word Worada, which means district, and the other word is Kebele, which means community, and I'll use those interchangeably, and I hope it will make sense in the slides. We worked at all levels of the Ethiopian Federal Ministry of Health, but we had a special focus on the district and community level. We were working in part to build capacity for continuous improvement of maternal and newborn health services. I'm going to give you a short background of the project, talk about an evaluation that we did of our improvement approach, and some of the results that we achieved. First, on the project, the overall goal of the project was that all women and newborns received a community-level maternal and newborn health care package in time, every time, and our area of focus was the birth to 48-hour time period, the most significant for maternal and newborn deaths. In order to do this, we looked at 3 different areas. We wanted to improve performance and capacity of frontline workers. We wanted to increase demand for maternal and newborn health services, and we wanted to have districts that were able to continuously improve maternal and newborn health services beyond the time period of the grant and project. Now, why was this important? Ethiopia has very high rates of both maternal and newborn mortality. Almost 96% of births happen in the home, and most of those happen without any skilled provider. While the government policy is technically that all women should give birth in the facility, they're a long way from that reality. And so the Maternal and Newborn Health in Ethiopia Partnership, or MANEP, focused on kind of bridging that gap. So we were teaching very basic skills at the community level to ensure that women and newborns got a basic package of care. For example, the basic package of care included recognition of danger signs, hygiene for labor and delivery, cord care, breastfeeding, community distribution of misoprostol, uterine massage, and those types of things that community health workers and families can be taught to do and deliver at the time they're needed. So we had 3 areas of intervention. The first was that we had clinical training for health extension workers, and I'll talk about who they are in a moment. We had the community-level meetings for pregnant women and their family caregivers. We had a behavior change communication strategy, and we were using collaborative improvement. My presentation is going to focus on the improvement strategy and an evaluation that we did as far as how well we built capacity for improvement. Before I get started on the improvement strategy, I want to give you a very brief overview of the Ethiopian health system. I'm not going to go through this entire diagram. I know it's very dense. I just ask you to focus at the Kebele and health post level. The health post is a small health clinic that serves a population of 5,000 people. At each health post, there are 2 health extension workers. These are community health workers, but they have a bit more training. They have about a year of training in 16 packages of care, which include prevention, immunization, family planning, case management for malaria, diarrhea, sepsis, pneumonia, and then maternal and child health services such as antenatal care, postnatal care, and safe and clean delivery. But there is a caveat that health extension workers are not WHO skilled birth attendants. For those of you who know that definition, they don't match that that they don't meet that definition. So our focus was really at the Kibele level, where we worked with health posts, health extension workers, and the health development teams and Army, which are basically a network of community health workers. At the health center and WARDA level, staff from those levels provided coaching support to the communities. So let me talk a little bit about our improvement strategy. We used an adapted strategy that was based on the Institute for Healthcare Improvement Breakthrough Collaborative Series. Our actual adaptations are taken from work done by the USAID Healthcare Improvement Project, and I can give you more information about that afterwards if you're interested. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, collaborative improvement involves multiple site-level teams who have common aims and measures and who are all working to improve care, and they come together on a regular basis to share their learning and experiences. This allows for faster improvement overall and spreads all the successful ideas very rapidly. In our particular case, we had quality improvement teams, what are called Kibele QITs, who were made up of health extension workers, community health workers, traditional birth attendants, community leaders and elders, so official and unofficial, representatives of key community groups, and of women and families, very importantly. These teams use Plan, Do, Study, Act cycles to continuously test ideas to improve the specific areas of pregnancy identification, antenatal care, notification of birth to the health extension worker, and postnatal care within 48 hours. Teams were supported monthly by the coaches that I mentioned from health centers and WARDA and districts. And every 4 to 6 months, the teams would come together in a workshop called a learning session, which was specifically designed to maximize sharing about what had worked, what they had tried and tested, what worked and what didn't work. These were held at both the regional and district level. We used the learning sessions and the coaching visits to build capacity through classroom training, mentoring, and on-the-job or just-in-time training. And I want to add that at the end of this process, we developed a compilation of all the best practices for how to improve care at the community level that we call the Change Package that's available on our website. And this is, of course, specific to Ethiopia. Just to give you a sense of some of the results of the project, we had a baseline and endline evaluation, and here are some of the key indicators and significant changes. So if you look at the percent of women who used antenatal care services, for instance, those who had more than 4 visits, it increased from 16% to 52%. Of the percent of women who used delivery services, you can see that with health facility, we have some minor increase in the use of delivery services at health facility, but a decent increase in the skilled providers or HEWs. You'll note that the CHDA, which is Community Health Development Agents, and the traditional birth attendants had almost doubled, and in our case, we were training them to provide these basic skills, so although they are not skilled birth attendants, the fact that there was someone outside the family helping who knew how to recognize danger signs and could facilitate referrals is a very important middle step. And finally, the percent of women who used postnatal services also increased, especially there with the skilled provider. We went from 43% to 75%. Now, I mentioned that the improvement teams were making changes, and they were one of the key parts of that is that they were monitoring and measuring their own indicators. These are not precisely the same indicators as the end line and baseline due to the way that data collection was done and the needs of the improvement team to get immediate feedback on how they're doing. So in antenatal care, the improvement team saw that of newly identified women each month who received their first antenatal visit, they saw an increase from 38% to 90%. And in postnatal care, the percent of postnatal care visits by an HEW within 2 days. So the previous indicator was not time-bound. This indicator is time-bound because the first 48 hours are the most important. We saw an increase from 1.4% to 36%. While 36% in and of itself is not a huge percent, it's 7 times higher than the national average and actually very big for postnatal care within 2 days. And in fact, we found that when births were reported to the health extension worker within 2 days, the postnatal care rate was actually at 80%. So if they can get them to report the birth, they can get postnatal care. So we did an evaluation of our improvement strategy to look at the capacity that we left behind for continually improving care. This involved a survey and an in-depth interviews. Both the survey and in-depth interviews covered the areas of WARDA, culture, and leadership to support improvement, what were the motivations of those involved, and what were their self-reported or self-assessed improvement skills. Just very briefly on the evaluation content, we used a 5-point Likert scale to look at the WARDA culture and WARDA leadership. We had a recall of what they felt the score was before the intervention and their current view of what the score was afterwards. I won't go through all of these areas, but you can see they're related to facilitation, administration, administrative support, supervision, use of data, encouraging locally tested solutions and local use of data immediately to determine whether they're making improvement. So these are some of the general areas that we looked at. Likewise, for improvement skills, we used a Likert scale. They self-reported what they felt their confidence was in these areas. So we're looking at organizing representative teams, choosing a problem to work on, collecting and using data, and developing and testing solutions. So what were some of our results from the survey? Well, we saw here are some of the most significant results that we received as far as the changes in WARDA culture for improvement and leadership. You can see that they saw a big increase in, or a big difference in the supervision style in the way that the health centers and district staff were working with them. They involved a cross-section of community stakeholders. They were using data at the community level for decision-making and using locally developed and tested solutions rather than solutions that were coming top-down. Of course, working within any national standards and policies. We also saw increased commitment and a supportive environment for improvement. Unfortunately, with the improvement skills results, we don't have a before. I think in future we would try to do this survey at the beginning and the end of the project so that we get a better sense of the before and after. Overall, though, the average scores were 3.7 and above, so we feel that they had a pretty strong sense that they could implement improvement activities. We saw that the Amhara Quality Improvement Team leaders and health center coaches rated themselves lower than their Oromia counterparts. And we believe that this is in part because Amhara region started later than Oromia, as well as had a lot more turnover in their coaches and team leaders. So we had more people who weren't trained or were being trained on the fly during the project. And finally, we saw in a regression analysis that there was a greater number of months served as a coach or team member was associated with a higher score of self-assessed improvement skills. Unfortunately, due to some data collection errors, we weren't able to do the full regression analysis that we had been hoping for. In the motivation free list that we asked them to do, there were four areas that came out strongly as their motivation for doing this work. The first one was to support the Millennium Development Goals to avert deaths, and to avert deaths. The second was that the participants began to see the changes in their own community in the mothers and newborns that they were caring for, and that became motivation to continue. They also had high numbers of maternal and newborn deaths in the community and personal experience with maternal and newborn deaths. The order of factors by region and respondent subgroup varied a bit, but these remain the top four reasons for all of those groups. Overall, the interviews showed that they highlighted positive results. The respondents talked about increased facility deliveries. They talked about reduced maternal and newborn deaths. They talked about their new processes of care at the community level and connections between different levels of care. Related to the understanding of improvement, respondents use their own words to describe this cyclical process of improvement, with an emphasis on constant measurement and checking as to whether what they were doing was making a difference. They presented some examples of how, when something didn't work, how they proceeded to try and test different things until they found something that achieved their goal. Several also commented that they were often overwhelmed with trying to improve all 16 areas that health extension workers were responsible for at once. And what they learned was that they really need to focus on what is the priority, where is the biggest mortality, morbidity, of course they don't use those words, but really focus on what's most important and start with those and then move on to other areas. As we saw from the survey results, they felt that there was improved coordination and supervision. They talked about improved coordination and communication between communities, health extension workers, health center, and district level staff, as well as within the community. They felt more organized to be able to provide care. I know one of my colleagues here talked about community empowerment, and we heard from the respondents that they felt that they were more able to solve their own problems. They felt empowered to do that on their own. We had a few more themes that came out, including that there was an increased capacity for delivering maternal and newborn care and caring for mothers and babies at the community level, and there was an ability to continue using the improvement approach beyond the time frame of the project, including some examples of application of the improvement approach to immunization and tuberculosis care. So in conclusion, we feel that MONEP was successful in building districts which are capable of continuous improvement beyond the life of the project. These improvement approaches that we use, the collaborative improvement and the PDSA cycles, are commonly used in high-income settings, but they can also be used in low-income settings and specifically in low-literacy community-level environments. One of the key things that we did was set up the project within the government structure, so we strengthened the government structures rather than creating a parallel system of supervision and training and those type of things. We worked within the government structures and really strengthened them, which we hope will be more sustained in the long term. And finally, we had a lot of interest to spread these approaches to new geographical areas in Ethiopia, but unfortunately, the Gates Foundation was unable to fund us due to some of their shift in focus in Ethiopia. But we do know that there are other projects in Ministry of Health, some Ministry of Health districts that are picking that up and are going to take some of our lessons learned forward. You can get more information at www.monep.org. And I just wanted to put in a commercial for our supplement in the Journal of Midwifery and Women's Health in early 2014. That's going to cover all of the areas that I mentioned, capacity building. There's a few articles on community distribution of misoprostol and the improvement strategy. Thank you.
Right, thanks to all our presenters. I think it's a very interesting range of perspectives, but as you can tell, lots of common themes and how nicely they complemented each other. So we do have time for questions, and your questions may be about a specific presentation or to all of the presenters generally about some of the themes. Are there any questions of any? Yes.
I'm wondering if any of the presenters integrated technology in the mobile solution, telehealth solutions. I know that they're starting to do that with community health workers in Ethiopia, for example. Or if you have communications from the academic program to Honduras, during the gap between missions. Any thoughts about using technology to really sort of sustain in some ways beyond the
I'll start with just two things briefly. One is as far as extending the relationship. So as part of one of the things that I said was an important lesson learned to take to our work in Latin America is to empower and promote an ongoing dialogue about what the community retail work. So we're increasing the communication with those partners. There's another thing that we're doing, actually, it was totally serendipity that I happened to be on the plane to Honduras with someone from USAID, and so Andrew Wiseman sort of turned us on to the use of technology and mapping solutions, even because he was there working on these kind of things, to do asset-based community development work, to identify assets using Google Maps, and be able to help folks really visualize where the resources were in the community by being able to show them, instead of just drawing as we typically, I don't know if you do these kind of workshops where you just kind of draw out the map, actually using the technology, and then being able to upload that so that other organizations working in the area can go back to the map that you've already used. So I don't know if that's where your question was, but those are some examples of the way that we're doing that.
We weren't using any mobile technology as part of the project, but one of the things that came out was for notification of birth, for the health extension worker to know that a birth had happened or a woman was in labor, if they were very lucky, they found out and could attend the birth. One of the locally developed solutions was that they began using mobile phones to notify the health extension worker, which surprised us, actually. And sometimes it involved going to a neighbor or another community member who was designated as known to have a mobile phone. But that was really the locally developed solution rather than something that we were doing systematically.
Thanks. Any other questions for any of the presenters? Yes?
I was wondering about, you said in Honduras, there wasn't the resource allocation for collecting data in order to determine the impact. And so from that learning, could we be repeating the cycle in terms you get support and activities go? Are you going to be able to build in those resources?
Yes. And so, you know, and it's, I don't know what the backgrounds are in the room, but these kind of trips happen all the time. Churches sponsor them, civic organizations sponsor them, and well-intentioned people just aren't thinking about ripple effects of their work and those kind of things. So when I mentioned that, what we're saying is that with these community partners we're working with directly, now a part of the planning process is, okay, so who are we taking down to do medical, who are we taking down to do dental, and now who are we taking down to do assessment? And our students will be involved in that, and we as faculty will be involved in that. We're already in a dialogue with Dr. Staines and the ministries of health to sort of line those things up. Wasn't even a consideration prior to our collaboration. Because either these well-intentioned folks are thinking, how can we maximize the amount of people we can serve during this short-term trip by taking down personnel that just to do direct service to patients. But what we're helping them understand is that if you want to support the community, then you've got to bring some folks who are going to help understand your impact on the community and then be able to provide that information back so that you can build capacity within the community to meet their own needs.
And then just follow up this stuff back here, that comparison of the experience here, that makes a final data. No, the really the next step needs to be in part, you said, the policy change. It's important to look at why is there 0% coverage of dental care for someone with chance in that county. Are the students involved with any of that policy level work?
Yeah, and this really gets to the way in which we're running our program. But so students who are assigned to this project are looking at the implementation efforts in Latin America, looking at the implementation efforts for this Give Kids a Smile event in our county. Their policy paper for their policy class is related to that. So they're doing work I teach rural health. In my class, the practicum for my class is this project. So they work with teams to do this. They're working with the health director and local officials around this. So yes, we really see it as an integrated educational effort as well as an integrated implementation effort.
Any other? Yes.
As a sort of that,
Nathania?
I work for my tribe up in Macau, which is up in the other Washington. What are some of the strategies that you use to help successfully engage your community? If you're up for a first project, and you talked about some doing an interview process with your tribal leaders, how were you able to successfully
we do a lot of community-based participatory research, so I think that our community members are engaged throughout the entire process. And so we have adapted a lot of the CBPR methods in community health assessment by developing community advisory boards to help guide and design the process. But we're also really careful to make sure that when we work with tribes, we're coming in as a third party because we're the university. So we let the tribes really tell us how we can support their efforts. So, and then what we do is we help leverage some of the resources and the data that might be available from the university and engage partners like the Albuquerque Area Indian Health Board or the Indian Health Service. So we do a lot of the partnership building in advance. Another approach that we've used is really integrating some of the techniques like empowerment evaluation up front. So we work with the tribal communities that help facilitate meetings. Because one thing that we found is that sometimes people who work for the tribe feel like they're in between two places. They might be community members, but they're also working in an administrative role, so they might not always feel comfortable with working directly with the community members. So we come in as a third-party neutral facilitator and help facilitate some of their meetings. So I think that's one of the strategies that works is to engage third-party organizations. But we also really believe in just local community organizing, like identifying the local leaders in the community who can help advocate for the role in bringing them on as board members and help design the process.
Hi, for Campbell University. I'm not sure if it's geographic about like where the other med schools are. I'm looking to Campbell as also the vet school. How we use the resources from the vet school as well as the local medical schools to help bring more resources for the vet region in addition to using that.
Yeah, in fact, we don't have a dental school, so we're reaching out in collaboration just to pull off the oral health events that we're talking about. We recently opened a medical school on our campus, so we will be involving med students moving forward. The Give Kids a Smile event in Arnett County, there were student volunteers at sort of every level of education from universities like NC State, New Chapel Hill, East Carolina, all coming together in Arnett County to work with our students and our faculty to pull off that event. So we had I think this slide does this. We had over 150 volunteers that were involved in providing service for these 91 kids. So, obviously it's about implementation as well as education for us, but yeah, reaching out to those other resources. Now, the vet school is an interesting one. I'm not sure we've fully explored the options.
You need to have, the animals here as well. So
sure.
Make sure they have animals. And once you have incorporate the human-animal bond, more people, come in because, we're taking care of animals as well.
I think it's a great idea. In my PhD from NC State, so I like the idea that collaboration a lot. Oh, yeah. I love it, yeah.
Thanks. Any other questions? Yes.
I was wondering also if maybe you could mention about the vetting of the community health workers in Nicaragua. And then I'd like to add a question about the academic practicum area in global practice and what might have to happen in academia to make that happen on a full semester basis versus charity initiatives. I'm hosting a meeting at another professional association to try to get universities to start thinking about that as currently non-academic. So I think for sustainability purposes, so I'm curious about others from other universities too, wondering about that.
So the first part was to you.
Could you repeat the first part of the question, though?
I wasn't sure if you said, how did you choose the community health workers that were part of your health project?
Okay. actually, we didn't. We contacted community leaders and set up a meeting if the community leaders were interested, and we met with the whole community was invited. We met with them. The local program staff presented the program, answered any questions, gave a sort of a profile of what we typically see in terms of who's successful in the community health worker role and what the characteristics are. And then we said, you know, this is your decision, whether you guys want to participate or not, and who you choose is up to you. You know, here are some guidelines, but the decision is yours, and we're going to step out. You guys can talk about it, and when you're done talking, let us know, and we'll come back in. And they sometimes took 5 minutes, and they sometimes took an hour, 2 hours talking, and then they would bring us back in and let us know what they had decided.
And it worked out that way.
Yeah, it worked really well. Yeah.
And in terms of the academic world trying to struggle with how to do this kind of practicum experience that encourages thoughtfulness and sustainability and outreach globally, I can really only speak for our campus and our program, which is a new program, it's a small program. So we're really careful about the projects that we're choosing to be involved in and making sure that any of those projects are deeply connected in a real way to projects that we're doing in our backyard, because that's what we really see as our niche and our focus and what we can actually do with our resources. Now there's another school that you might have heard of in North Carolina, University of North Carolina, they're still getting the word out about that program. They have a few more resources than we do. There's a slightly larger program, and they have the capacity to do more things in more places and to sustain this kind of project. What I think is important is that we are careful and thoughtful in the ways that we design these programs as academics to make sure that the learning experiences are respectful of the communities, but at the same time meaningful for our students. We're trying to do that in a really small way with these projects that I've outlined here, carefully selecting those and making sure that our students are benefiting and that we're respecting communities. But I don't know how the schools like Chapel Hill that are involved in a lot of bigger projects, how they manage those kind of questions.
And then it is a topic, I think, broadly across the schools, because there is some work going on now with which you may be familiar, looking at the whole MPH through the Framing the Futures Task Force. And the field experience, of course, is going to come out very high as being critical to the master's education. But I think it raises some of these questions, particularly given, I think, the sense of the importance of global health being a broad concept. What's that going to mean? So there is some thought being paid to what that's going to look like. Great. Well, I think this was a great presentation. Thank you all again. Everybody did a great job and a really nice complement of and some key important themes. The session was sponsored by the Community Health Planning and Policy Development section. And it is now possible to add another section. So if you're interested in this, the area covered here, APHA does allow a second section now without cost. If anybody's interested, I do have a sheet of the sessions being sponsored by Community Health Planning. So just encourage you to think about the section. And again, let's give a nice warm thanks to our presenters.